Okay, back to the how the villagers acted or reacted to our being there. One of the things that I noted right off in running patrols, particularly in the daytime, but even at night, there was a big mix of anger. I can't say never. About 98% of the time, I never felt that we were really welcomed, and that we were there doing something that really they backed us in what we were doing, that they wanted us there to help protect them from the enemy. Remembering that 90% of the population, not just of Vietnam, but probably the surrounding countries, Cambodia and Thailand and such, 90% of the population is illiterate. You don't have any education. So you're out there in the boondocks, you know, out in the country, you're out in the jungle, you're out there where the little villagers are that's getting terrorized and killed and tortured and those kinds of things. I never really blamed them for how they felt somehow. I thought, boy, they're not very grateful that we're here and trying to gain their freedom. Now I'm 10,000 miles away from home, and here's these little folks. They don't seem to appreciate what we're doing. Well, with all the callousing and everything else that you have to do to your mind and all to be able to withstand loneliness and fear, you got to a point to where you calloused them out as well. So, as far as their emotions are, they were mixed. Some showed fear without a doubt. They were afraid of us as well as they were afraid of the VC. They probably, I know in many villages that I went into, they probably hated us. Who they wanted us being there was the feeling that I got. And generally under those conditions, you could tell that they were rather hostile. And because of that, we were even more prepared to shoot them if we had to, if it got to that point. We were rough on some of them on occasion. By that I mean we did not treat them nice. Our lives were at stake, and we were doing what we thought to be the right thing, of course. But that's kind of how I read the villagers and their emotions and really how they felt about us. They'd hug you, and the children would hug you, and those kinds of things. But there was always this underlying feeling of I don't trust any of these people. And I, for one, never would allow any amount of trust to exist. I wouldn't let it build for fear of my life. So that's how I handled it.
So do you think some of them understood, or you think most of them didn't understand what you were doing in the first place? Because I've read things that they just want to be left alone. They didn't care anything about the war. They just want to be left alone to farm and raise their family.
Right. And that appeared to be what they did every day. I mean, literally, you know, in the mornings, of course, it was always good to see the sun, because all the night ever did was bring, I won't say evil, that's too cliche-ish, but nighttime was a time when fear was greater, for obvious reasons. You can't see what you're doing. I mean, you can't see your hand in your face usually. And when there's a full moon and you got to run patrols, you then become a silhouette at night for the enemy to see you. So it's a no-win situation. The best thing is that you can't see your hand in your face, and hopefully they can't see you either. So that's kind of thing. But the villagers, some seem to be grateful. Very few, though. Very few. So too many things have happened to them over the years, but remembering that they're uneducated and they're out in the country, if you will, trying to just make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they were trying to do, and I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of them there that they really had no inkling of what we were doing there. None whatsoever. That's my feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Their means of communication, of course, was strictly mouth to ear. You know, they didn't have TVs and such out in the bush.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know that except for in the rear with the gear and the beer that I ever saw a TV over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was back in the battalion, which I was seldom there.
Yeah.
I spent my first tour, first 6 months in the bush. I came out of the bush and spent 6 months in the rear. I'm trying to think of the position they called it. Anyway, the reason I came out of the bush is that I had what's called immersion foot.
Mm-hmm.
Immersion foot is overexposure of your feet to water, where all the skin on your feet peels off. Mm-hmm. So they put me on crutches for about 3 days, and it makes your feet very, very tender. You can't walk and do patrols like we did in the rain, the monsoons, and all that. Your feet are wet all the time, and this, that, and other. So, anyway, I was fortunate in one respect that that happened to me, I guess. So I got to stay in the rear. But in the rear, you had guard duty, and I ran patrols out of the rear, teaching other Marines how to run patrols because they'd never been real jungle. They never ran patrols before. So that's what I did, and I volunteered to go back a second time. I had orders after my first tour to be a drill instructor at Parris Island, which is a Marine Corps facility for boots, new recruits, both the same. And I was 19, and I didn't want any part of that. I had been through quite a bit at my age, I felt, and I really wasn't ready mentally to take on a bunch of new guys like I once was, you know, try to teach me anything. I don't want to do that. So, consequently, what I did was, in order to do away with those orders, I re-upped for an additional 6 months in Vietnam as a scout.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what set. And I came home for 30 days. And I'll shut up and let you ask me some questions.
Well, no, keep on going.
Well, I'm summarizing this for you now because it can be very, very, very detailed. And I can get it as detailed as you wish or need. When I went back as a scout, I was the guy along with what was called a KC, which was Kit Carson, like the old, you know, Kit Carson of the Frontier.
Mm-hmm.
They nicknamed Kit Carson scouts who were surrendered Viet Cong or NDA. They surrendered to the Marine Corps. They were captured.
Mm-hmm.
And surrendered or surrendered. And I had one of those attached to me as a scout. So for every scout, each scout had a KC,
mm-hmm.
a Kit Carson scout or a Viet Cong, what used to be a Viet Cong.
Mm-hmm.
The one I had two or three attached to me. But I got rid of one, the first one that I had, because he was 16. I won't forget him. He was a nice young gentleman. His name was Ah, I guess like A-H. But he had been a Viet Cong for some time and surrendered. But he was, in my opinion, a little, I don't want to say immature, but maybe that's the best word. immature or inexperienced with the villagers in terms of roughing them up to get information out of them. We had to, when I was a scout, we were responsible for interrogating villagers, picking up prisoners of war and interrogating them. And we would go out in front of patrols and operations companies and such. It was our responsibility to go out in front of everybody and see what was going on. So that's what I went back to do. And I did that for two reasons. One is my first tour was, because I've had people ask me, why in the world would you want to go back as a scout, you know? Well, I had a couple of buddies that were scouts, as it turned out, their first tour. One of which I talked to about 3 months ago, and he's really messed up. He's got some bad problems, but I hadn't talked to him in 25 years. But I felt that from the time I went to Vietnam initially, see, my idea of going was to help free people, you know, and allow them a democratic way of living or a capitalistic way of living, whichever. And I thought it was the right thing to do. But at the same time, my idea of a person that went, quote, to war was to be not only just shot at, but to be in battles and preferably to be wounded. It's hard to imagine, at least for me at the time, how anyone could say they'd been to war and not have at least those three things happen to them. And it happened to a lot of people that none of those things ever happened to them. Of course, I know now the difference, but I didn't then, okay? So none of those things, not none of them, I've been ambushed and shot at on more than a few occasions. My first tour, but it wasn't to the degree that I felt was necessary to, quote, do my part. I know it may sound stupid, but that's why I went back. So, and I wanted to be wounded because I wanted to see what it felt like. I know that sounds stupid too, but that's the truth of the matter. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
I bet that's a lot of people think too. Yeah.
I don't know. I think a lot of people have regrets for some reason or another. I know I've talked to a few that because they weren't wounded, they didn't feel like they had done their job. And there's a lot of wounded people, certainly a lot of people killed. Anyway, I ended up being wounded my second tour. But I was a scout with a Viet Cong that actually lived with me. He actually lived with me, and I would let him go home to visit his family occasionally. Usually a couple of days a week or something, depending on what we were doing. I couldn't let him go. And as it turns out, I had let him go home and the day I was wounded. So I never got to see him again. I don't know what happened to him. But anyway, I came home to spend 30 days. I got 30 days leave between tours. And I had a couple of buddies from up north. One was from Maryland, and one was from Boston, Massachusetts, the one that's messed up today. And they came down to Memphis to visit, and all we did was drink and party. That's all we did. Had a real good time. Of course, I'm not sure I don't think I was 20 then. But anyway, it was real nice to have come back to America and seen the real world, those kinds of things. And in fact, I did not tell my mother I was going back. I had hoped that she wouldn't find out. I thought I could go do my 6 months tour and get in and out, you know, and she wouldn't know it. And we were sitting at supper one night, one of the fellows, Dennis Beasley, from Massachusetts, looked at me, and my sister was there. He said, what are you going to do when you get back across the pond? Well, the pond meant the ocean. Mm-hmm. The pond meant when you leave the United States and California, when you finally get back to Vietnam, what are you going to do? But I just looked at him and didn't say anything, kept eating, you know, opened my mouth to catch it. Well, she caught it. And my sister started crying, of course. But, anyway, I told my mother, I said, I wasn't going to tell you that I was going back. It was really rough on my mother while I was over there. I didn't realize it at the time. And my first tour, I got two Dear John letters. One from the girl I had been going with at Memphis State. And got another one from this other girl. So those are, you know, a couple of things that you remember those things. People dumping you at a time when you really need their emotional support. Mm-hmm. Moral support and those kind of things. So it was kind of interesting first tour.